Welcome back again to Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Friday, January 4th, 2013. This is podcast number 255, and my name is Ben Stone. This is our first podcast for the new year together. Thanks for joining me. Been kind of away from the microphone for a while. There was the whole week of Christmas there where we kind of were coming and going and so forth, so I wasn't able to get very many podcasts together that week. And then we've been on travel going throughout the southern United States and looking around and seeing things. And I had a few technical difficulties leaving parts at home and whatnot. So we're currently in Alabama. And we were able to get back on the internet and have all the equipment here. I want to start off with congratulations to our friend Will Coley. Will was on the podcast with me not that long ago, and he's a really good guy. I chat with him on Facebook all the time. He's really dedicated to the cause of liberty and to his Islamic faith, and I really appreciate him as a friend. And Will Coley placed fifth in the 2013 Liberty Inspiration Awards. So congratulations, Will. Great job. The work over there at Muslims for Liberty, I couldn't be more pleased with it. You guys are doing a great job over there. And, in the 2013 Liberty Inspiration Awards, Stefan Molyneux placed first place, and congratulations to Steph. And he beat out Ron Paul. Ron Paul came in second place. Now you think about that. Steph beat Ron Paul in 2012, and Will Coley came in fifth, below just a couple of people and Ron Paul and Steph. That's pretty amazing. That, to me, because I hate to say it, but the folks over there at the Liberty Inspiration Awards are not necessarily, how do we say this? They're not on our end of the libertarian spectrum. They're a lot more, run for office type mentality. So for Steph to come in first and beat Ron Paul, and for Will to be up there in the top five, that's really inspiring. Inspiring, yeah. That's okay. So anyway, now today's podcast, I want to refer to three books. I'm not actually reading out of them or referring to them, in that sense. But if you want to know more about what I'm talking about, these three books that I'm about to mention cover everything that I'm saying in a slightly different way, probably a much better way than the way I'm saying it. But one is by David Gordon. I had David on the just not that long ago, and David Gordon has an older book that's really great. I talked about it on the podcast where I interviewed David Gordon, and it's really good for a textbook for homeschoolers. The name of it is An Introduction to Economic Reasoning by David Gordon, and there will be a link in today's show notes for that on badquaker.com. And this is a really good book. It's not very large. It's easy. The way it's put together, it's really easy to read. You can just breeze through it in an evening. You can use it to refer to on a regular basis if you're doing homeschooling. Or you can just hand it to a kid that's interested, and they'll take care of it themselves. You don't really have to do any more than that. Now, the two other books are not quite as smooth. Murray Rothbard's The Mystery of Banking it's only like I think it's maybe around 300 pages or something. It's not a big book. It's not written in very, it's not real complicated. It's got a couple graphs and charts, but it's nothing really that's going to really bog you down. It's not like sitting down reading college economics that, it is in a sense, but it's real economics. It's not the nonsense that they teach in most colleges. So the second book that I'm talking about is The Mystery of Banking by Murray Rothbard. And then the third book I want to refer to is A History of Money and Banking in the United States by Murray Rothbard, and he specifically covers the time frame from the colonial period to World War II. Now, the reason why the third book, The History of Money and Banking in the United States, the reason why I'm mentioning it is because today I'm going to be talking about greenbackers, and greenbackers... I'm going to try to make a distinction between two types of greenbackers. Those who are just simply deceived, and they haven't really gone into all the detail to figure out all the ins and outs and the positive and the negative and everything. They've just been given the sales pitch, and they had no reason not to believe it, and so there they are. That's one group. I mean, no harm to them. I mean, no. If you're just confused and you've been told the greenbacker lies and so forth, and you've just accepted them, I have nothing against you. I'm not trying to attack you or anything else. But what I'm dealing with in today's podcast, or what I hope to deal with, is the actual deceivers who know that they're lying, who intentionally distort history and intentionally lie and deceive people into believing the greenbacker nonsense. Now, that's who I'm going to be focusing on today. So I don't want anybody to be offended if you've seen one of the various greenbacker movies. They have cartoons, they have movies, they have all these different things that try to lay out the greenbacker con in one form or another. If you've seen one of those and it seemed reasonable to you, so you thought, oh, okay, well, that must be how it is. I'm not attacking you. I want to encourage you to learn more on the topic, but don't go to those liars and deceivers that push the greenbacker nonsense to get your information. It's like, that's like going to your heroin dealer to ask him how you can get sober from heroin. They're not going to do anything for you except lie to you more and do everything they can to deceive you. This book from Murray Rothbard, A History of Money and Banking in the United States, if you take the lies that the greenbackers have told you about, specifically about the U.S. history and the history of money and banking in the U.S., and you sit down with this little book of Murray's, I think this book is only maybe 400 pages or so, and you can just spot the lies that the greenbackers lay out, just one lie right after the other. And if you read a book like A History of Money and Banking in the United States by Murray Rothbard, and then you sit down and you watch a video like the classic is the Secret of Oz. That's one of the greenbacker movies that they love to throw at you. Now, I did a review on that about a year and a half ago or something like that. I think in that review I made it through the first like 17 minutes or something, and there was like 30 some lies or something. I mean, it's really obvious. They just pound you with lie after lie after lie after lie. And if you have a foundation in actual knowledge and you have a foundation understanding actual history, then as soon as they start spouting these lies, you can spot them right off. But if you don't already have that foundation, they're professional deceivers. And so this is why I don't hold anything against someone who's fooled by these people. They do this for a living. It's like if somebody sold you a really rotten car and really ripped you off bad on that really rotten car, I'm not going to be upset with you. I'm going to blame this rotten car salesman who lied to you and sold you this car. And that's the same way with the greenbackers. I don't have a problem against somebody who is simply deceived. I have a problem with people who, make these films, who publish books, who push it on their audience, podcasters, commentators, people who have a profit to make by the selling of this horrible, horrible socialist nonsense. And I'm going to get into it more. Right now I'm just kind of ranting on it in this introduction, but I'm going to get into it. I'm going to get specific details. And folks, if you've heard me talk about the greenbackers before, don't just turn off the podcast and go to the other one. Go to another one. Don't just say, well, I've heard this, and go on to the next one. Because honestly, unless you keep these things refreshed in your mind, when the deceivers come, or when people who have been deceived come to you with this greenbacker stuff, you're better equipped if you have it fresh in your mind as to how to refute them. If you don't really have that stuff fresh in your mind, it's really difficult to deal with their lies. Okay, so that's the three books. We have An Introduction to Economic Reasoning by David Gordon, great for homeschoolers. We have The Mystery of Banking by Murray Rothbard. It's a really good overview of banking and interest and things like this. And we have A History of Money and Banking in the United States by Murray Rothbard. That's the three books that I want to recommend, and there will be links to all three of those. If you can't, folks, if you can't afford to buy these books, go over to the Mises Institute. I'm not sure about the one by David Gordon, but most Murray Rothbard stuff is available in a downloadable PDF form in the Mises at the Mises Institute. If you just do a search there, you can find it, or you might even be able to find an audio version of it with either Floy Lilly or possibly Jeff Riggenbach or one of the others actually doing a voice version of it. So if you can't afford the books from Amazon, you know, go over to the Mises Institute and get it for free. But one way or the other, get this information in your minds so that you have a defense against these deceivers when they come at you. Now, okay, so I need to cover why I'm talking about greenbackers. You know, a year and a half ago or so, I put a lot of time and effort and just, and really, I think, thoroughly covered the greenbacker topic. But, you know, time goes by, and I really didn't realize that within the Ron Paul movement, there were as many people deceived by the greenbackers as there were. This started to come to light around election time, when a lot of the greenbackers just came out of the woodwork in the Ron Paul movement and started really pushing their greenbacker agendas. And I really haven't discussed it like I should have between the time of the election and now. I shot a few things off in Facebook. And I exposed a few greenbackers in Facebook, and I got some people really, really deeply angry at me in Facebook, including one guy that's been a friend for years. I mean, a good friend. I've sat at a campfire and eaten chicken with the guy, and he was so, and he's a greenbacker, and he is so infuriated at me that that he really, I mean, how do you put it? He made a complete out of himself. He did. And this is the problem with the greenbackers. The mentality gets into their mind, and it's a form of brainwashing, and it's a religion. I'm going to get into that more in just a minute. Now, some greenbacker stuff popped up on the Bad Quaker forum, and I want to make it clear that I'm not attacking any of the posts that were made in the Bad Quaker forum. There, we're having a discussion there. It's a place for discussion, and the people on the forum are more than welcome to, you know, ask questions and kick things back and forth and talk about them and discuss them. We're not going to allow a bunch of propaganda on the forum, pro-greenbacker propaganda, but it is a good place to get involved and talk about these things and work them out among ourselves so that we can kind of figure these things out. But I want to make it clear that I'm not attacking anybody on the forum. I really have delayed this podcast about greenbackers. I should have done it in the first part of December, but I was just so backed up on everything else. And I thought, well, the 1st of January is going to be a real good time to just take this topic on right off the bat. It's probably one of the things I'm going to talk about at the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire in February. So it would be good even for me to sort of refresh myself on it a little bit. So again, I'm not attacking anybody on the forum. I'm strictly talking about greenbackers today, because of what has come up in Facebook, because of all the hype from the election and the Ron Paul fanatics that are greenbackers. So that's my motivation in doing the podcast on greenbackers today. And let me just point this out, one more thing on this before I move on. Ron Paul is not a greenbacker. Ron Paul very clearly has stated that he is not a greenbacker. He does not support the greenbacker policies. And so when you see these people, one of the things greenbackers will do is they feed upon this, in the Fed, because they hate the Fed too. Okay, but, you know, that's where the common ground ends, right there. They want to end the Fed and then replace it with Congress to do exactly what the Fed does. And, well, that's not quite accurate, but generally speaking, but I'll get into that in a minute. But Ron Paul is not a greenbacker, has spoken very clearly against greenbackers. I think Ron Paul should have made it more obvious. I think he should have specifically named the greenbackers. I think he should have spoke out and called them what they are. They are socialists. He should have said that. He hasn't. But he's leaving it for people like Gary North and Tom Woods and others to fight his battle for him. And that's one of the faults that I have against Ron Paul, but that's all beside the point. Anyway, okay, so let's get into this now. Let's talk about what a greenbacker is. It's important to understand, I'm using this phrase greenbacker in a derogatory manner, and I'm doing that intentionally because I intend to be derogatory towards those people. They're liars and they're deceivers and they're very harmful and they're very dangerous. I'm using it in a derogatory manner because it should be used in a derogatory manner. So now, what is a greenbacker? Okay. The word itself comes from the days of Abraham Lincoln, when Lincoln began issuing fiat currency, straight through the government, bypassing banks, bypassing the treasury, bypassing the actual minting of money. He just started issuing paper money, green-backed paper money. It was literally the backside of it was green. That's why it was called a greenback. And he issued this paper money, strictly, paying for his war. That's the whole point of it. He had this war that he was in the middle of, and he wanted to finance it. And so he did it through forcing people to use his greenbacker money. And when I say forcing, it should be clear that Lincoln forced the greenback money on the public, on the North, on the Union, at the point of a bayonet. And if you're not sure about that, I'm not going to get into that as a whole topic today, but here's one little example. Did you know that there was a particular time when, at the point of the bayonets of Ulysses S. Grant, Jews were rounded up in Kentucky and forced to migrate out of Kentucky because they didn't want to use the greenbacker money? They wanted to use gold and silver, and Ulysses S. Grant, upset at the Jews, actually wrote letters to Lincoln and got authorization to round up all the Jews in Kentucky. Now, think about that for a second, because these people that the Ulysses Grant decided were all Jews, and he just threw all Jews into this lump with all of the others, and condemned them all because there were some people who were Jewish who preferred trading in silver and gold, specifically with cotton and silver and gold. They were buying cotton I can't remember the exact way that they were doing it now, but essentially they were buying with trash greenback money and selling it for gold and making a profit off of it or something like that. I can't remember the exact deal. But one way or the other, they were, by not properly using the government's greenback dollars, they were making a profit in gold and silver on it. And Grant didn't want this to happen because this was going specifically against the rules that Lincoln was trying to inflict. So they literally rounded up Jews in Kentucky indiscriminately. It didn't matter if you were in the cotton trade or not. They just started rounding up Jews in Kentucky. Now, this is a fact of history, and the greenbackers don't want to talk about that part. The only way that a greenback ideas will work is through the force of government. And I'll get into that more in just a couple minutes here. But I wanted to lay that groundwork first, that this is who we're talking about. And the idea of the greenbacker is that the government just blatantly issues fiat money with nothing at all to support it other than the good faith and the trust of the government. Ha! Good faith and trust of the government. And they say that with a straight face. And that's it. That is entirely the scheme. Government pays for itself through issuing fiat currency. That's the whole thing. Now, they use several enticements. They say, well, we could stop all income tax, we could stop tariffs, we could stop all these different types of taxes just by simply having government have the ability to issue as much money as it needs. And in their simple-minded little process, they think this makes sense, and they think this is a good idea. But then they sell it through complicated, deceptive means. And before you realize it, you've accepted this nonsense, through their sales pitch, and they hook you into it. So I want to go into that some today. I want to talk about exactly what it is that they want to see happen, what it would look like if they got their way, And possibly I might even get into the fact that eventually they are going to have their way. Eventually this is going to happen. And we need to recognize, we need to not be to blame for it when it happens. When this happens, when the government gets rid of the Federal Reserve and the government just by itself starts issuing currency on its own, and it horribly flops into the face of the American people, we as libertarians, we have to be separate from this, and we have to make sure that we are not blamed for this, because right now, if it was to happen right now, it would all be blamed on Ron Paul, because the Fed would be ended, and people would say, see, just what Ron Paul wanted to happen, the Fed has been ended, yay, hip hip hooray for Ron Paul, and then they'll dump greenback policy on us, and you're going to have a worse problem than you had before, and all of us in the liberty movement will get blamed for it, even though Ron Paul's not a greenbacker and we're not greenbackers. We'll still get blamed for it, because in the eyes of the public, it's all because we ended the Fed. And so, all right, so now I'm going to make a break here for the commercial. And when I get back, I hope to do this with less ranting and a little bit more logic and history and some more reason into this. Okay, stick with me. I'll be right back. Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics. There are video and audio files you can download, you can participate in the discussion boards, and there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators. Join Tom and his team and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge. And you can get all this for just $99 a year. Go to badquaker.com, click on the banner for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, and by using this link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you and you'll help badquaker.com. Thank you. Did you know author Taryn P. Lupo has a new novel out called One Nation Under Blood? When a rejuvenative blood technology is developed that pits the young against the old, the government must take firm steps to address the war of supply and demand brewing across generational lines. Blood is not the only thing bought and sold in this dystopian tale of technology, economics, and independence. Vampires are now very real, but we never expected them to wear our grandmother's best Sunday dress. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break. Now, I want to emphasize again that there are two types of greenbackers that we're dealing with here. We're talking about the first kind of greenbackers, which are the deceived. They have watched a video, they have listened to a lecture, they have listened to a podcast, they have listened to some talking head on TV or whatever, and they have been convinced of this. And they're deceived. They just haven't actually gone into it. They haven't studied it through. They've heard a really slick presentation, and they have just accepted it. Or they, you know, somebody in the Ron Paul movement has approached them, told them about it, and they think this is what Ron Paul believes. And so they think, well, this must be the answer. This must be what Ron Paul wants when he wants to dissolve the Federal Reserve. So we have the deceived. And I don't blame them for being deceived. I want to encourage, if you are deceived by the greenbackers, I want to encourage you to, you know, seek the truth, to get help, to get out of it, to get away from those people, to don't go back and have them try to help you get out of it, because that's the problem. Those people that are the actual deceivers that push this stuff, that go on as talking heads on TV, and that promote their movies and promote their podcasts and promote their other their websites and so forth. These people are making money off the greenbacker process or of the greenbacker philosophy, and they are dangerous and they are harmful to the liberty movement, and they're not libertarians. And that's what I'm going to address with you today. Okay, so we have these two types: the deceived and the deceivers. I never want to fault the deceived. I want to attack the deceivers. That's who I'm after. So if you're just fooled by these people, don't be offended at what I'm saying. I'm just saying the truth. Now, sometimes the truth stings really bad, but that's because the truth has this cleansing capability, and it's like pouring alcohol on an open wound. Yeah, it hurts, but it cleans at the same time. So let's get some alcohol out here and just dump it right onto this wound. All right, so we understand that the greenbacker wants government fiat money to be issued. And they typically have a whole series of things. They talk about credit. They talk about fractional reserve banking. They talk about ending taxation. They have all this other, all their shtick. Just get past that. What they really want to happen is they want the government completely in charge of the money supply. They want the government issuing fiat money. That's the core belief of the greenbacker. Some of them in the United States, they want Congress, specifically Congress, to issue fiat money. Other countries is different variations, but that's what they want in the U.S. Congress issuing fiat money to pay all of government's bills. Somehow they believe that, you can't trust the Federal Reserve. No, we can't trust them, but we can trust Congress. Now, on the surface, that just makes you want to just hold your head and go, no. But that's what they believe. All right. So now, I want to talk a little bit about when I say that greenbackers are not libertarian. When I say that, I want to give the reason why. Libertarian philosophy is empty if it's not based on the love of the truth. The libertarian view of history is driven by the constant desire to know the untainted truth. That's why we delve into history. That's why libertarians tend to delve into history and try to find out what really happened. Not what are the government lies, not what are the court historians paid to record. Not that, but what really happened in history. Because libertarianism, one of the things that is unique to libertarians is our tremendous love for the truth. Now, libertarian philosophy is meaningless if individual determination is trampled. If it's acceptable for mutual voluntary exchange between individuals to be forbidden, regulated, limited, taxed, managed, controlled, or in any other way interfered with by some third party under threats of violence. If that's acceptable in libertarian philosophy, then libertarian philosophy should be rejected. But it's not acceptable. It is not acceptable in libertarian philosophy. Libertarianism is the belief that any initiation of force or fraud is morally reprehensible and must be condemned and rejected. This is the core of what libertarianism is. You can play with words and phrases. We can talk about the zero aggression principle. We can talk about non-aggression principle. We can talk about individualism. We can talk about free market. All of that stuff is dressing. When it gets right down to the core issue of what is libertarian, libertarian must be the rejection of the initiation of force or fraud. Aggression must be rejected, and all lies must be rejected. This has to be the core of libertarianism, and it is the core of libertarianism, and it's why we are set apart from everybody else on the political spectrum. Because the Republicans will lie to you, the Democrats will lie to you, the left will lie to you, the right will lie to you, and the Libertarian Party will lie to you. All of these people will lie to you. But libertarianism in its core is the seeking of this truth and the seeking of a peaceful coexistence in mutual voluntary exchange with our fellow humans. That's what the core of libertarianism is. Now, how does this relate to greenbackers? Well, the greenbacker faith is based on lies and deception, and greenbacker policy can only be implemented and maintained by force and the threat of violence. Now, that may be a pretty bold statement, but I'm going to try to back that up. I want to show today that the greenbacker policies are the opposite of libertarian philosophy. So now let's jump right to greenbacker lie number one, and that's history. The greenbackers will just lay out lie after lie after lie about history. And that's why I said that one book from Murray Rothbard is absolutely essential in order to understand the true history of money and banking in the U.S. An example of how they lie about history, in the one of the common things they'll say is, well, Rome issued copper coins as fiat money, and it was very, very successful, and it went on for hundreds of years. Rome was very successful in issuing its copper coins as fiat money. Okay, you just contradicted yourself. Copper coins are not fiat money. Copper is a commodity. You dig it out of the ground and smelt it, and it becomes, it has a purpose other than just a piece of paper. So when they say stuff like that, you know, immediately you know that they're lying. And when you see the layers and layers of lies about history that they try to use to prop up their fake history that they've created, it gets pretty thin after a while. Greenbackers will often bring up the Constitution, and they pretend to be lovers of the Constitution. They pretend to want to return to a constitutional government and all this other nonsense. Well, Article 1, Section 8 in the Constitution is what they're falling back on. And Article 1, Section 8 says that Congress has the right, I'm sorry, it has the, not right, it has the power to, this is the words of the Constitution, to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and a foreign coin, and to fix the standard of weights and measures. Guess what, folks? That's not fiat. That is not slips of paper. Coining money is not printing money. Coining money literally meant to smash silver and gold into coins. That's what it meant. So the Constitution assumed hard currency. It assumed real coinage, not fiat. But that's only point number one. Point number one is that the Constitution did not authorize fiat money. But point number two is, why should we care what a failed, unsigned, fraudulent document says anyway? Why should we care what the Constitution says when the government itself constantly breaks the Constitution? Why should we care what the Constitution says when the Constitution authorized slavery? The Constitution was a con to begin with. And that's a whole subject of another podcast. Okay, so true fiat money wasn't really practical until the printing of money, until printing actually became practical. Even in the early days of printing, it was still pretty expensive compared to, you know, what it was just a few years later. But once printing became really, really cheap, and you could print intricate designs on paper, and you could do that in a way that you could say, okay, now here's a very, very fancy seal of the king, and therefore we know that this is really the king's seal. And once you got printing to that level, then fiat money became practical as far as from a government point of view, in order to con people with, in order to, you know, issue fiat money without costing the king anything, and then he could con the people or force the people into taking it. So prior to the ability to print things like that on paper, kings and other tyrants were pretty much stuck with either clipping the edges of coins, or mixing metals with coins, or making the coins, you know, re-minting them and minting them just slightly smaller than before. These were the methods that tyrants used to deceive the people. And then when people would start to figure out, well, these coins have been debased. They either don't contain the right weight, or they've been clipped, or they're too small, or they don't have a pure gold mix in them, or a pure silver mix, or whatever. Once the people would start to catch on to that, then the only way that the despot, the only way that the tyrant could maintain his fake money was through aggressive laws. And now we come to, what was it, the 1500s, when Thomas Gresham coined the famous phrase of Gresham's Law, bad money drives out good money if their exchange rate is set by law. And the way this works, and this is a lot of misunderstanding on this, the way this works is, you know, if you have a cheap piece of paper that's forced by the government onto people, and you have your choice of, you know, trading that for some good, or trading, say, gold for some good, you're going to have a tendency to want to get rid of that paper and hold on to the gold. So as long as there's a law that forces you to use the paper, you're going to stash your gold and get rid of that paper for anything you can get for it. And this is what happens when inflation really starts to kick in. The first thing that will—well, maybe not the first, but one of the very obvious issues with inflation is that there will be this great desire among people to get rid of the cash. They want to get rid of their money, their paper money, as quickly as possible to buy something that's tangible, something that has real value. And we've seen this in cases where hyperinflation went out of control. People would literally buy anything to get rid of the money. They'll buy food, they'll buy goods, they'll buy things they don't want or need in order to get rid of the money, because the money is losing value, but things retain their value. So bread retains its value, suits retain their value, hats retain their value, gold retains its value. You know, anything that is of substance retains its value, but fiat money, as it starts to inflate, loses its money. So the longer you hold it in the form of money, the less valuable it is to you. So in that sense, fiat money teaches you not to save money. It teaches you to spend money as fast as you get your hands on it. And that's why, with Grisham's Law, that's why once the government passes a law that says you have to use this debased money, or this this lesser money, whatever the king has used, whatever the despot has used to rip his public off, once the law is set that you have to use that money, then people will hold on to good stuff like gold and silver, stuff that will retain its value, and they'll try to get rid of that fake money as quickly as possible. So that's how Grisham's Law works. And Grisham, this was again in the 1500s, Grisham was not the inventor of this. He's credited with coining the phrase. But Copernicus had talked about that some 40, 50 years earlier than Grisham, and it was in there was a Muslim book called Study of the Monetary System, and I can't pronounce the author's name, but it was like 100 years earlier that it was laid out very clearly in that. But going all the way back to like the 5th century B.C., Greek philosophers and Greek playwrights were talking about it, and actually, you know, putting out plays that involved what would happen when the king debased the money like that. So this is not a new concept at all. It goes all the way back to our earliest understandings and our earliest dealings with tyrants trying to, you know, rip off people through the use of the money supply. So fiat money requires the fist of the tyrant and the deception of the ignorant, because, you know, in the early stages of this, when the king is just clipping the edges of the coin or making the coin slightly smaller or whatever form that he's using to debase the currency, in the early stages it's based on deception. And this is the same when you go to paper money. In the early stages of paper money, it's based on deception. And in Murray's book, he actually goes into that pretty thoroughly in around around page 50 or so of The Mystery of Banking, that he goes into that, actually. But anyway, I don't want to get caught up on that point too much. What I really want to emphasize on is that without this deception and without the aggression of the government, the market will always return to sound money. And there's something to be said about phrases, too, like sound money, like cold hard cash, like hard cash, or even the word cash. Cash is, comes from storage. We know in computers, some people call it cache, or cache is a place where your computer stores stuff in there. Well, this terminology that's associated with money all comes back from, like the word sound money. It comes from the point that you can take a silver or a gold coin and drop them on a hard surface, and they have a particular sound. And if your ears are tuned good enough, if you really know what to listen for, you can tell the difference between a 100% silver piece and an 80% silver piece and a 60% silver piece. If your ears are tuned good enough, you can hear the sound to tell the difference between gold and silver. And as a matter of fact, when I was a kid. Well, let's not get into that. We don't have enough time to go that direction. Okay, so real quickly, let me address this question. Somebody is going to say, and because this topic always comes up, well, what about bitcoins? Bitcoins are not based on hard, cold hard currency, cold hard metal. on sound money, on hard cash. Well, bitcoins exist due to the aggression of government. Now, what I mean by that is that whether bitcoins will ultimately work or not is all based on what governments of the world do. If the governments of the world continue to use the methods that they're using to try to, you know, control the drug market, control underground trades of different kind, put levies and taxes on stuff, if as long as the governments of the world continue to distort the market like that, people are going to seek methods to go around the government rules and regulations and the government's interference in the money supply. So bitcoins may, you know, if all the governments of the world evaporated tomorrow, bitcoins would probably evaporate tomorrow too, because, you know, the main reason for having bitcoins is as a workaround to the distortion that governments are dumping on the market. So think about bitcoins like drug runners' tunnels under the Mexican border. You know, right now today, one of the common things for a drug smuggler to do is to dig a tunnel under the Mexican-U.S. border, and then they can transport drugs back and forth, right? Okay, well, there wouldn't be any of those if there wasn't the stupid drug war. The drug war itself creates the need for those tunnels. But if there was no drug war, there would be no need for the tunnels. Well, bitcoins are the same way. Bitcoins exist because of the government distortion in the free market, in the actual market, because of government's distortions in the market. Bitcoins are a workaround to try to get past the government. So if the governments of the world didn't exist, there wouldn't be any need for bitcoins. We would just exchange in whatever way that the market naturally produced. So will bitcoins exist in a free market? Probably not. Maybe for a short time, or there might be some kind of arrangement that they could adapt themselves to and be workable. But in the long run, without government influence, without government distortions in the market, some type of hard currency in the Mises form would return to the market. Okay, when I come back from this break, we're going to get into it a little bit more, and I'll see if I can wrap this up for you. Do you have an Amazon account? If you don't, let me encourage you to set one up. Setting up an account is free and it's easy, and Amazon has great prices, and in most cases you can avoid paying sales tax. Plus, if you're careful and lump your purchases together, you can get free shipping. And Amazon has almost anything you can think of, plus it's safer and cheaper than driving all over town. When you buy stuff, if you follow the Amazon link at badquaker.com, Amazon will give Bad Quaker a tiny portion of the purchase. It won't cost you any extra, but you'll be supporting this podcast. Thank you. Okay, thanks for sticking with me through the break. Now, the greenbacker faith is based on lies and deception, and greenbacker policies can only be implemented and maintained by force and through the threat of violence, through the government. That's the only way you can have this. In a free market, who would accept fiat money if the market were free on its own? Of course, it wouldn't. It couldn't compete. Okay, so now the Greenbacker heresy number one, front and center, sovereignty. You'll always hear these Greenbackers say, a nation must be sovereign. And then they say that the government has to control its own currency for that to happen. Well, I kind of think of that as one of those oops moments where you see the man behind the curtain exposed. Because when the Greenbacker says, a nation must have its own sovereignty, sovereign, really? Sovereign? Really? A nation has to be sovereign, right? Is that what you're saying? Is that your whole argument? You really want to stick with that one? Because if we take this apart and we say, all right, well, what does that actually mean? Well, that comes from the olden days when the king was the sovereign. And why was he sovereign? The king was sovereign because he was appointed by God. That's what made him sovereign. He was appointed by God. Because sovereign literally means superhuman. It means the one human that's above all the others. That's what sovereign literally means. And so here we come to the point where we see a heresy and we see a blasphemy. It's a heresy when Greenbackers believe this. And it's a blasphemy when they say it to others. And what do I mean by that? Well, If the king equals sovereignty, which that's what it used to be, that's the way it was when there were kings, if the king equals sovereignty, then the coin that was authorized by the king was God's appointed coin. So the coin became sovereign. So the coin equals sovereign. And as a matter of fact, in some countries, they actually called the legally minted coins a sovereign or a crown, but often it was called a sovereign. So then the state is the prime god of the greenbackers because according to the greenbackers, a nation's sovereignty is based on having its own currency. And now we see the connection between what God blesses, the coin, or not the coins, because they don't want that, they want paper, but the money, the money supply, as blessed by God, is the proper money supply. Well, if the money is being blessed by Congress, or blessed by a president, or blessed by a prime minister, if that's what decides what the money is, then you've placed the Congress on the seat, on the throne of God. And you've said, the state is the God. The state is God. The state determines what money is. And the money becomes the sovereignty of the nation because the sovereign, it's just like with the king. The king was sovereign because God placed him there. And now money makes the nation sovereign because the state says this is money. That is statism in its most pure form. That is blasphemy when a person teaches that, and it's heresy when a person believes it. And that's why I say that the state is the prime god of the greenbackers. Now, they may say that they're Christians or Muslims or Jews or anything else. They may say they're atheists. It doesn't matter. The truth is, you judge a man by what you see, by what he actually does, not by what his words say that he does. Well, if they're acknowledging the state as their God, and they're acknowledging that the only true money is the money issued by the state, then this is their God. This is what they're showing as their sovereign, as their God. And they'll say that money. They'll say that money cannot exist without the blessing of the state. They'll tell you that. They'll tell you that money can only exist through government authorization. And that was the point with one of the people in Facebook that got really upset with me. All he could do is just announce over and over that there is no, that all legitimate money comes from government, that you can't have money without having a government. Without government authorizing the money, you have no money. That was his whole point. That was his whole argument. So, you know, I don't try to teach in Facebook. I just generally point and mock and laugh at somebody like that, which is what I did, which is why he got so mad, by the way. Okay, now, so when you think about, so somebody might say, well, I'm a Christian, or I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Jew, or whatever, therefore your criticism of me is wrong because I can't believe that the state is God if I believe that Jesus is God, or that, or whatever. Well, here's a little thing to think about. I had a real good friend who went to India pretty often. And one of the things that, and he was also a very religious person, and one of the things that struck him odd when he was in India was he would take rides in taxis, and very often in an Indian taxi, they would have several statues of several Christian saints, and maybe like Mary and some of the others. And they would also have several different Hindu statues also, and they would have all these glued to the dash of their car. And if you question the taxi driver about it, he would tell you, he would let you know that what he's trying to do is he's trying to appease all these different deities so that he wouldn't get in a wreck and so that he wouldn't die in Indian traffic. You know, driving around in India can be a little scary sometimes. So he would appeal to these different gods because, you know, you want to cover all your bases and get as many gods as possible on your side if you're going to be driving around in India. Well, people don't realize it, but even in America, even people who think they're very religious and think they're good Christians or good Jews or good Muslims or whatever, oftentimes you'll set up a whole series of things that are actually in your mind. They're actually in the place of a God. And that can be, you know, social status. That can be the president of the United States. That can be your boss at work. It can be, you know, what kind of a house that you own, or how you dress, or what kind of image that you present. All of these different things can become a god to you if you let them. And my argument here is that the Greenbacker, like any other statist, has put this belief in the state into that position where it has become a god to them. Now, I want to move on from that. The Greenbackers are also, it's basically economic failure. The Greenbacker thought is based on really bad Keynesianism. If Keynes were around, he would refute them. That's how bad they understand Keynesianism. But it is based on Keynesianism. So, again, going back to the Ron Paul thing, Ron Paul is an Austrian, is into Austrian economics. That's what his basis is, not Keynesianism. And Greenbacker ideology, yeah, idolatry is better. But the Greenbacker whole ideas of the Greenbacker is based on a twisted version of Keynesianism. Very much like Keynes, the Greenbackers, their whole process would destroy savings if it were loosed. And it's kind of like what I was talking about with Grisham's Law earlier. Who would save if you know money is going to become worth less and less and less every day? Why save it? Why save money that you know is being devalued? So you're encouraged to buy it, to buy things, to spend it on anything. You're encouraged. Fiat money discourages savings and rewards excessive wasteful spending. Buy anything. Just buy anything. Just don't hang on to that money. If you remember back in 2001, when the economy was struggling, there was the tech bubble had just popped. The economy was kind of in the toilet. And right then, 9/11 happened. And George Bush says it's going to help the economy if everybody just runs out and shops. Well, that's Keynesianism. That's this idea, you know, you just need to get money back into circulation as quickly as possible and it'll fix everything. The last thing they want is people saving money. They're terrified of people saving money. The other thing with Greenbackers in reference to savings specifically is that they fail to understand how interest works. And they demonize interest. They try to make it sound like interest is some kind of a bad thing. They don't understand that interest is really just a matter of time preference, of saying money is worth this much to me today, but it would be worth more to me at a different time, or it's worth more to me now than it would be in 6 months, or the other way around. The banker or the person loaning the money is saying, I would rather have this money now. I would rather have this amount of money later, with including interest, and I'll give you this money now. So it's basically just a trade-off, a voluntary trade-off based on time preference. That's really all interest is. But somehow the Greenbackers, through their extreme hatred of bankers, they want to demonize interest in some way. And one of the things they'll tell you is, they'll say, well, first off, they build a straw man. They want to say anybody who's not a Greenbacker, or anybody who's not a supporter of the Fed, or who's not a Greenbacker, they want to call you a gold bug, and they build this straw man to say, well, you'd have to have everything controlled by... No. The market will take care of that. We don't have to say everything has to be traded in gold and make a law. That would be the opposite of libertarianism. We want to let the market decide what money is and let the market decide what the value of money is. None of those things in human hands. All of those things into the hands of the market and the will of the market. But they don't go that way. When they set up their argument, they build a straw man, this gold bug straw man, and they say, well, if you had 100% gold standard, then all the bankers would end up with all the gold because there's interest rate, and because they would, and they put out this hokey formula where if the gold standard were inflicted upon everybody by force, and then all of these particular avenues of control are put into their scenario, then all the bankers would end up with all the gold and nobody would have any. Of course, this is entirely a straw man argument. It's based on a fallacy called begging the question, where you set up the answer that you want before you even ask the question. And so by looking at it that way, by creating this little socialist circle and having all the discussion within this little socialist circle, then they get the answer that they want, that they created the scenario to get that answer that they wanted to begin with. And when I say socialist, it is a socialist scheme. Socialist schemes always depend on the fallacy that the market can be defined and controlled, and that a group of people can have 100% knowledge of the economy. That's every socialist scheme is based on that. And let's not cut corners. Greenbacker beliefs are socialist. They don't like that. They get angry when you call them socialists. But no matter how you want to paint the thing, the Greenbacker process is a socialist process. It's the government having 100% control of the money supply. This is the money supply is the primary means of production. If a government controls the primary means of production, you have socialism. That's what socialism is. Socialism is defined as the government having the control of the means of production. Well, if you have the government in 100% control of the money supply, then government controls the primary means of production. That's socialism. Now they get mad at you and they you're just calling me names. No. I'm saying exactly what it is. If the truth hurts, that's not my fault. I didn't create the truth. Now, let's jump back to this interest question for a minute. Let's say I have a deal with Bob over here, and Bob's going to loan me $20. But in a year from now, I have to pay Bob back $22. Is that your business? Well, for the Greenbacker, it is. The Greenbacker is not part of this whole Greenbacker scheme is that they're very much against interest. And in order to inflict that on people, you have to have, the state. You have to have government to come in and interfere in the private transaction between me and Bob over here and in our money loaning back and forth. You have to have the government interfering in the voluntary exchange between two individuals in order for the Greenbacker process, not only for the Greenbackers to have their fantasy of government-issued money with people using it. You have to have the force of the government to do that, but you also have to have the force of the government to stop people from loaning money with interest. So in two different ways here, the Greenbackers are depending on a socialist government to control interest and control loans and control the money supply. Well, how do you call that anything other than socialism? So for this reason, this is why I'm saying that the Greenbacker policies are the opposite of libertarian philosophy. The Greenbackers should be treated like any other socialist. We shouldn't, try to make up different terminology or make them feel better about it or not, in some way call it something other than what it really is. Greenbacker ideas are socialists. That's just the basis of it. You can't have it's kind of like taking a shower without getting wet. You can't be a Greenbacker without a socialist system to support it. And then really, once it gets down to the final question, you say, okay, so the Greenbacker wants Congress to control the money supply by issuing as much money as it wants. And then they'll say, oh, no, there'll be laws limiting how much Congress can issue. Oh, like there are laws limiting how much credit, how much, how big the deficit can be? Like that? Like Congress has been so good at limiting itself in the past that we should now trust it with the money supply? And so what's going to happen? Well, this is exactly what is going to happen. Eventually, the Federal Reserve, the game that's been played with the Federal Reserve is going to become very obvious to all of the public. And more people are going to realize that the Fed is just siphoning off the wealth of the American people. And it's going into not only wasteful government spending, that's happening, but massive amounts of money are going into the pockets of a very small group of bankers by way of the Federal Reserve. Eventually, that information is going to be understood by the general public. And the general public will require that something be done about it. And what will that be? What answer would the government come up with to solve the question of what are we going to do about the Federal Reserve? They'll eliminate the Federal Reserve, and the U.S. Treasury will begin issuing fiat money directly from the U.S. Treasury. That is going to have, it's as clear as a bell, that's what's going to happen. The Federal Reserve will be eliminated, and the U.S. government will start issuing fiat money directly from the Treasury. And what's going to be the result of that? Government spending is going to go through the roof. The dollar is going to be devalued. It's going to be a massive failure. The International Monetary Fund is going to have to step in with an answer, which is going to be some kind of a multinational dollar of some kind. Well, that's exactly how it's going to happen. And if we're not careful, us in the liberty movement, if we allow those greenbackers to call themselves libertarians and hang out among us and pretend like they're libertarians, if we continue allowing the greenbackers to put on the facade to the public that they are libertarians, then when the Fed is dissolved and when the Treasury begins issuing its own fiat money and when inflation really gets bad in America, guess whose fault it's going to be, folks? It's going to be the libertarians' fault with their money schemes and that crazy old man Ron Paul and his wanting to get rid of the Fed. Boy, if we just had the Fed back now, things would be great. And then in comes the IMF with all the answers. Folks, when you support the greenbackers, you are supporting the process that's going to create a worldwide monetary fund. When you support greenbackers, you are supporting the state, the concept of the state as a religion, the government itself. You're trusting the government to issue money and control itself in the issuing of money. And you're paving the way for an international monetary system with a single one-world entity in charge of the money supply. That's what you're paving the way for when you support greenbackers or even when you tolerate them in and among the liberty movement. I know this sounds a little harsh, but that's the case. That is exactly what's happening. And we have to point these people out as the socialists that they are. Now, you know, one way of looking at it, as I wrap this up, is that we can allow, thinking of the freedom fiends and their terminology over there, they talk about libertarian paradise. Well, in a libertarian paradise, we can allow socialists to have their little socialist party over there wherever they want. That's fine, as long as they don't inflict it upon other people by force. That's the problem. When do socialists ever get in charge of anything and not inflict their will upon us by force? And that's the case with the greenbackers. They say, well, we could have open currency. No, eventually government, it's backed by government. And eventually it's going to require force. And eventually you people are going to be the ones cramming it down our throats whether we want it or not. So we have to reject the greenbackers. We have to point them out as socialists. And we need to treat them as socialists. Folks, thanks very much for listening today. And remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. And if you want to discuss the stuff about greenbackers or anything else, we have a forum. You can get over there, log in, make a profile, and share your thoughts. Thanks a lot, folks.